Welcome to the Wild West Podcast, where today I'm very excited to welcome my guest, pro skier Hazel Birnbaum. Hazel is a newly retired pro skier as of this winter, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to her. She lives in South Lake Tahoe, and she did her thing, traveling the international free skiing tour for the better part of a decade through her 20s, and then she just decided to hang it up and move on. That is a big transition to figure out, and that's what Hazel is going through right now.
I feel like if you're not 100% in a sport that you need to be 100% in, then that's probably time to pursue other things.
Hazel, as I said, lives in South Lake Tahoe, and I met her at her home recently to record this podcast. She just re-torn her hamstring and was looking at several weeks of recuperation. She'd also started taking courses to become a nurse. That's her next move. Hazel's got a great sense of humor, and it was really fun to talk to her. So let's get into it. Hazel, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
For sure, thanks for having me. Yeah. We're at your place in South Lake Tahoe right now. We don't need to say where it is, but it's pretty beautiful. It's got a great view out the back of a little river that runs into the lake.
Correct, the lake.
And you're just hanging out?
Yeah, I'm just I just tore my hamstring, so yeah. I'm literally just sitting around.
Yeah, and it's kind of bad timing. The season is just starting to maybe get going.
The season is just starting, and I'm looking at a couple months on the couch probably. I didn't even tear it skiing, so it's a little depressing, but it's all right.
I was gonna ask, how did it happen? Do you want to talk about it?
It's kind of embarrassing.
Okay,
but I can tell you.
Is it something? It's not like you slipped and fell down the stairs, is it?
Well, I tore it on New Year's Eve. I did this like social media post about like I put in this video of me tomahawking, and I'm like, I hope I don't go into 2020 like this. And then Murphy's Law. The next day, I went dirt biking because I just got a dirt bike in October and I'm totally obsessed. And I'm like learning how to do these donuts. And I was in the parking lot after the ride and I was gonna show my buddy like, check it out, I figured it out. And like, just a weird fluke thing. It was like super gravelly, and so the back tire slid out and just like popped my hamstring randomly. So then the next week I'm just like hobbling around and I walking just outside. It snowed like a quarter of an inch and I slipped and fell like an old woman and tore it again. So yeah, it's not like anything cool. It's just the way the life goes sometimes, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is your winter outlook for, you know, 2020 right now?
Now things have changed a little bit. I think I'm probably laid up for a couple months, but I'm hoping to be back at it like mid-March. I have 2 weeks off from school, so I was going to go to Sham and do some skiing with some friends over there. And then come back, and then probably I have another little teeny project in May over there, and then the rest of May I was going to spend on the east side of the Sierras ski touring, and that's about it. That's kind of what we got going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anywhere in particular in the eastern Sierra?
We're looking at a few different lines, but it's kind of depending on conditions, you know? I don't like to set too lofty of goals and then just get totally crushed.
Yeah.
So we'll just see what's in condition in May.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you recently made the decision to retire officially.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
And I want to ask you about that, but first, like for listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with the world of free skiing, I wanted to ask you if you could just describe what it actually means to be a professional free skier as you have been. Like, what does that entail? What does that life look like?
A lot of top ramen. No. I spend as much time as I possibly can skiing outside, doing that every single day, and that's what I've done up until, I mean, I'm still trying to do that. I'm just trying to switch things a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's the general idea, is you represent your sponsors, and which are these wonderful entities that help you financially and get to where you want to go, and like it's a total blessing.
Yeah,
but it's a lot of dedication and hard work too. I don't know, that's kind of what I think it is.
Yeah. Well, what, like, how did you break into the, let's back it up to the beginning. Like, how did you first get into free skiing before, before you were pro, when you were getting into it just for fun or competitively?
Yeah, so it's weird, like, in the U.S., like, we use the term free skiing, and in Europe it's the same, like, they call you a free rider or a free skier, but to me that just means skier. So, like, it's just how you ski in a way that you ski. So I moved here when I was 18 and started patrolling at Kirkwood, and I skied every day, so I free skied every day. And we had this, like, it used to be like the Subaru Freeride Series or Free Skiing North America Tour. I don't know, there's like a million names that they've put it under, but they called it the Extreme Championships.
And it was basically a ski competition that would come through town.
Yeah, exactly. And they would use this venue at Kirkwood called the Cirque, which is permanently closed. And I was involved in, like, the rescue aspect of it in my early 20s. And I would see these women just, like, ripping these super sick lines. And I was like, I can totally do that. I ski the Cirque all the time. And so that's kind of how the transition happened. Was, like, I was really motivated to try and see where I stacked up in the group, and then it just kind of snowballed until that's what I was doing full time.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so how do you decide that you want to try? Do they have tryouts or qualifiers or something?
There's qualifiers. So I competed on the Freeride World Tour for 5 years, and to get into that, you have to qualify either in, there's two regions, there's the North American region, and then there's the European region. And as a woman now, you have to be there's only one spot every year for a new qualifier. So you have to be the top female in skiing or snowboarding to get a spot on the world tour. And then you kind of requalify every year, hopefully, if you're in the top five or whatever.
Got it.
So that's how that works.
And, like, what are you judged on?
So it's kind of like, I always compare it to figure skating, which is hilarious, but it's a judged event, right? So there's criteria, there's five different main criteria. There's an overall impression, like line score. That's just like they look at what you ski down the mountain and you hit a bunch of features, basically. That's what freeride skiing is. Think like Warren Miller or all the, like, just you're just skiing and you're finding things that look fun and natural. And the whole idea is to make something look really good. So your score is based on, like, line score, fluidity, aggression, tricks that you, like, put down in the line. Like, those basic things like that. So, it's like comparable to, like, the, like, World Surf League situation. You're with this group of people, just like how they are, like 60 people, and you travel over the world together and you compete at these different stages. And at the end of the five events, they're the crown of World Tour League champion or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what, like, what does it take? There are obviously awesome skiers all over Tahoe. What does it take to actually, like, crack into that? You know, how do you set yourself apart from everybody?
I mean, how I did it was I was like, okay, I'm going to be done with patrolling because I can't compete and patrol at the same time. And there's, like, five or six events in the U.S. So I would travel around to each event on the qualifying series and try and get the highest score possible, right? The most podiums. And then it's a point system based on that. Whoever has the most points, you get to do the tour the following year.
Nice.
So it's just, honestly, it takes a lot of money.
Right, you gotta travel around.
And not everyone has that, so you travel around like a dirt bag, basically, living in your car or staying on people's couches, and, like, the purses aren't very big. So I don't know, it just takes a lot of motivation. Like, people have to really want it to be there.
Yeah,
that's how I've discovered.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And did you have, like, do you have a specific style, or, you know, something that you do that?
Yeah, I mean, so everyone's a little different, and the world of competitive free skiing is kind of evolving right now. You have, like, your classic chargers, like big mountain, think like Hugo Harrison back in the day or Seth Morrison, and but now that's, like, you know, you have Raina Barkred and Jackie Peso and a few other athletes there, just like they ski the mountain as hard and as fast, and they just hit big airs and stomp them. Mm-hmm. And it's just like straight charging. And then there's the more freestyle aspect, the kids that have like grown up in the park that are transitioning into big mountain skiing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're more based on like playful, fun hits with like some tricks thrown in, and it's more like it's a playful way of skiing versus like big mountain charging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like respect to both, but I think I definitely fall in the category of like big mountain skiing.
Yeah,
more just like chargy style versus playful. I mean, I would love to be the other way, but that's just who I am, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So Kirkwood, is that your home mountain?
Yeah, Kirkwood's my home mountain.
So what is it about Kirkwood? I was there yesterday and talking to people in Kirkwood, and it's kind of remote, and everybody who I talk to there has this like reverence for the mountain. It's like everybody's special place.
Yeah, it is a weird thing. I think it's because it's a 30-minute drive from South Lake, at least. So everyone commutes there, so it's like you have to be dedicated to want to go there. It's not that big of a mountain, but there's a lot of really cool nooks and crannies, and you can have, for being so small, it's more big mountain chargy like style than anything else we have in the area.
Hmm.
Except for maybe like, you know, Squaw and Alpine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the remoteness requires dedication, and I think that's maybe part of the reason why people are so once you're a Kirkwoodian, you're like obsessed, you're addicted to it. And we get a lot of snow.
Yeah,
like if you look at the snow totals around, it's just like a thing that happens there. It snows a lot.
I'm gonna be doing an in-depth inspection of the snow totals there later this afternoon.
Yeah, you are.
So back to, you know, your career in free skiing. So what does that look like? You're just traveling all winter.
Yeah.
Competing at these different events.
Yeah, so that's kind of what the last 5 years, even 7 years, because I was on the qualifying circuit for 2 years before that. That's the hardest part for me, is like I am very much like a really relaxed person, and I like to have my space and like time. And when you're traveling with a group, you're constantly on, like, 24/7. There's, mm-hmm. like, dinners and parties, and you're with, like, 60 people all the time. So there's that, and then you're traveling, which is exhausting. Traveling's exhausting.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to complain or anything, but it's just tiring. And I'm, like, you know, I'm always doing everything on a budget because I only have so much to work with. So uh-huh. I end up, like, on these crazy flights to, like, layover for 24 hours in like China or something, which is like, it's character building. But maybe not. It's just it's a lot of travel for sure, but at the same time I've gotten to see a lot of really beautiful places, so
yeah,
I don't know, as its ups and downs.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And then while you're doing this, are you thinking to yourself, like, because it obviously takes a toll on your body too, not just the travel, sure. but the sport itself.
Yeah.
So are you thinking to yourself, like, man, I can't do this forever. I got to line something else up? Or like in the moment, what are you thinking? Are you just focusing on the competitions or?
Yeah, I'm definitely focusing on the competition.
Yeah.
So like my preseason is I start training in the gym in August or September. And I quit mountain biking because I'm afraid of getting hurt,
mm-hmm.
and dirt biking. And I pretty much focus on like being as strong as I physically can be and like eating well and being healthy, knowing that I'm going to go into this season and start traveling, and all that is going to be slowly eroded away, right? Because you can't maintain that high peak level while you're traveling. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
And like you don't have access to like the foods that you want, or right. like you just don't have all your things. So yeah. then it's a game when you're on the road to like try and make good decisions the whole time, and like stretch and like do all the things that you need to do. So it's like, and then on top of that, focus on the competition.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people, I mean, I'm constantly impressed by other athletes that can maintain, you know?
Yeah. And while you're out there, are you trying to build your rep? Like on social media, are you?
I mean, I'm not. But yeah, I mean, people are definitely like, you'd be amazed when I come home. People are like, oh yeah, that was great. Like, people actually care. They like tune in and listen and watch watch our events on the live feed. And so I definitely am promoting as well as I can, right? I'm not maybe as strong in that department as other athletes, but yeah.
But that's like a big part of being a pro athlete these days. You got to have a strong Instagram.
It is the biggest part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because it doesn't necessarily it doesn't necessarily jibe with everybody's personality.
No.
You know, if you're sort of an introvert or you're somebody who isn't into like oversharing, it can be a real struggle to put posts together every day that are supposed to like psych people up and you know, show people who you really are and all that.
Yeah, I think I'm really fortunate, and I've been working with the same companies for a really long time, and they know me as a person, and so they don't necessarily demand all of that from me. There are other companies that they, you know, they have these athletes only specifically based on their Instagram following and social media presence. But my theory is that it's not all about that. And I spend a lot of time sitting on the chairlift or in my community. And when I represent these brands, people ask me all the time, do you like that ski? You know, all the time. Or other things. Oh, how about that? You know, blah, blah, blah. And so I think it's that personal interaction that, like, say, for instance, between you and me, and me talking about the product and like physically showing how much I love it, that actually connects with people and gets people to like buy things, which is the ultimate goal, right?
Right.
So to me, I think it's more on a personal level, where I think that's overlooked kind of a lot from specific brands. But some people get it, and I think it's a really like valuable tool for product promotion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Definitely overlooked.
It's definitely overlooked, but I think it's like, it's there, and people are doing it all the time. So, I mean, I get asked every single day when I'm out skiing about my skis or whatnot.
Yeah.
We'll get back to my conversation with Hazel in just a moment, but first, let's take a quick break.
I'm just wondering what kind of toll free skiing actually takes on you.
Mentally or physically?
I guess both. I was thinking physically,
you
but
mean,
mentally.
And do you mean competition, or do you mean just skiing every day?
Just skiing every day. And like hucking it off cliffs and stuff.
I mean, it's getting harder. The older you get, the harder you need, the more time you have to actually put into like maintaining your body and like stretching and eating right and drinking water. But like when you're in your 20s, it's the craziest sport, right? Because there's a lot of athletes that don't do any training and they just party and they crush it. And they're amazing skiers. But I always think like if they had put time and effort into like the other prep work, where would they be, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, it definitely takes a toll on your body. My knees hurt all the time in the winter.
Oh man.
But it's, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change a thing. You know, it's like this, my passion, my passion had been being a doctor, because then I would have been like financially stable and have an amazing career. But my passion is skiing, so it's just different, right? You're spending as much time outdoors as you possibly can, and I don't think it's an overall toll. I think it, like, longevity wise, it like, it's gonna make me stay younger than say if I was sitting at a desk all day.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, so
have you ever had any major injuries or accidents or close calls or anything?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, 100%. But, like, people always say, you know, competing on the world tour is so dangerous. And there are certain aspects that are really dangerous, and you are pushing yourself as an athlete, but you're also so mentally and physically present in that moment when you're competing that I think your ability level is like heightened. You're like heightenedly aware. So the risk is lower for what you can control on a personal level. Like I can control my body, but I can't control anything around me, like the slope, you know, snow, rocks, all that stuff. So that is like a whole other ball game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, at that point in competition, you're relying on your mountain guides and the people running the competition to make sure everything's safe for you. And it's not always the case, for sure. Like, I've been caught in a slide during competition.
Oh, man.
It's gnarly. So it's just weighing the risk factors, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're officially retired now?
Yeah. So I told everyone on the tour last year that that was my last year competing.
Oh, okay.
And I'm done. I'm like happy with my decision.
Yeah. What's your favorite part of retirement so far? I'm sorry. And you're 33?
I'm 33.
33 and retired. That sounds good.
There's a lot of other athletes on the tour that are older than that. I mean, we have people in their late 30s for sure, still competing, and people that have been on the tour for 10 plus years. But that's not my personality. I like to try new things and kind of see where life takes me a little bit. I don't want to be just a skier. I want to like have a lot of different things that I do in my life. But yeah, I am 33 and officially retired, and so far so good. It's been except for this little injury, but it's cool to, if the snow's not good, I can be like, I'm gonna go ride my mountain bike,
right,
or do something different and not be so stressed,
yeah,
about it,
because you would have to go out.
Yeah, because I get crazy in my head. I'm like, oh, I have to train every day, I have to be this strong and ski these lines before I leave. And like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. And how did you come to that decision? Was there like a moment when your mind clicked over to the decision that this just wasn't going to work for you anymore? Or?
So I look at my mental state when I first started the tour, and I was like super gung-ho, really hungry. Because that had been my goal, right, to qualify for the tour for a certain amount of years. Mm-hmm. And, like, I finally did it, and I was there, and I was, like, so in it. And then, you know, every year, with, like, more injuries and other things happening in my life, I just wasn't as present as I wanted to be on the tour. And last year, it snowed so much here at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I would leave and have to go to a place where there was no snow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just super frustrated, and I just was like, well, you know what, I think it's time for the next little like direction change. Doesn't mean I'm not done skiing. Everything in my life that I do is so that I can ski more, but just means that I'm not gonna be competing on that that level or that entity anymore. And maybe I'll do something different, but who knows. Right now it's more like doing projects that I want to do and skiing where I want to ski when conditions are good.
That's cool.
It's very self-fulfilling. It sounds very narcissistic, where I want to be.
Well, that's what you have to do. I mean, when you're like self-employed, those are the kinds of decisions you got to make.
Yeah.
So does that mean like focus in terms of your skiing?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean focusing on filming, or like how do you kind of maintain your role as a, you know, as a pro, as an elite athlete?
The goal is to make myself available for film and photo as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
To promote my sponsors. That's kind of like the big transition. And then on top of that is, so the more content I create, the better it is for my sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all they're looking for, to be honest, at the end of the day, is just content for them to use to promote their products.
Right.
And that's like how I'm going to continue to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
As long as I want to do that, right?
Right.
Like, I may not always want to represent a specific company, and at that point I'm going to have to like financially do this on my own, which is totally feasible. So this just depends what your motivation is, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then for you personally, like, what is that, how's that transition going?
It's going pretty good.
Yeah.
So I'm, I decided to go back to school.
Okay.
And I'm working towards becoming a nurse, which is all about like a flexible schedule so I can ski.
Totally.
And have the financial means so that I can ski.
I was saying, I said it earlier, but like if I could do it all over again, I might have been a nurse.
Yeah.
That's just seems like such a rad job. Mobility, yeah. Money.
And like
schedule, flexible schedule.
Being a professional athlete is so self-focused and self-based. This is like something that I can do to contribute to like the greater good of people. And that's really cool, right? It's fulfilling on a different level. And that's kind of why I decided, I was like, well, that's a good thing to like contribute for the rest of my life versus just the last 10 years have been all about like me, what I want to do and like how I can push myself. This is a little different. So I don't know. It sounds like a win-win to me.
Yeah. And, you know, are there people around? So there's all kinds of athletes, pro athletes, retired athletes, yeah. Former pro athletes in the Tahoe area. So is there like a community that you can kind of lean on for help in this, you know, trying to figure out what's next or just people who can help you kind of with this transition?
Yeah, there's definitely other people in my community, even in Myers. Like, we have a pretty high concentration of professional athletes or athletes that are quote-unquote retiring at 33. Uh-huh. But it's cool to kind of, like, look and see what they're doing or, like, bounce ideas off of them and kind of see, like, what their life has been like afterwards. And everyone has their own path, right? And I think it's really important to not just be, like, I am a skier and that is it.
Yeah.
Like it's great to be multifaceted so you can do lots of different things in this world. Cause there is more to the world than just skiing every day. I mean, I have to tell myself that, but I'm pretty sure there is. So
yeah.
Yeah, there's a great community in Myers and, I definitely know a few people that are in the same boat as me. So we kind of bounce ideas off of each other a little bit.
Yeah. Is there like a model for what comes next? I mean, I guess it's different depending on what you want to do, how old you are, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it seems like, you know, with something as intense as free skiing where, yeah. You know, you can sort of, you know, you might have to call it, you might have to tap out earlier than
yeah.
In other sports.
I mean, there are professional athletes in their late 30s, early 40s in big mountain skiing that are still crushing it.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's like, there's as much longevity as you want. As your body will allow. And I think it's cool to have other things to be motivated about. And it is a real thing, though, for athletes when they're done with competition to, like, that's all they've done for a specific amount of time.
Right.
Maybe they've never even had a real job.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, transitioning to that next step, I think, is scary for everybody. But it's kind of, I think that's why like going back to school is important for me. I have a degree already, but this is like more specific
mm-hmm.
and it has like a future role.
Right.
I think it's so dependent on what people want to do. A lot of people go into like marketing for their companies or like being
right.
sales reps or
right. do speaking gigs and events.
Speaking gigs or writing. People are yeah. like, why don't you do freelance writing? It's just not something I'm passionate about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a way to kind of keep rolling with it in a more professional capacity.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an option for so many athletes.
Yeah.
It just depends on what you want to do.
You know, I thought of this when you were talking about how you were on the tour and just kind of feeling like burnt out or like you weren't enjoying it as much as you should have been.
Yeah, for sure.
And is there any guilt that comes with that? You know, knowing that
yeah.
there are probably a ton of people out there that think this is the raddest thing you could be doing. This is a great lifestyle and you should be grateful for it.
Yeah, there's a ton of guilt. Hence, and that's kind of why I was like, you know, it's time for me to like pull the plug a little bit and let some of the other like younger athletes that are really fired up to get there have that opportunity. And maybe I can like my spot will open up to somebody else, which I think it did this year. Like someone who was previously injured and maybe not wouldn't have been able to get a wild card, got a wild card and took my spot. So that to me, and she was so fired up and grateful to be there. So to me, that's awesome. I feel like if you're not 100% in a sport that you need to be 100% in, then that's probably time to pursue other things,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Totally.
Yeah. And I was fortunate, like I had a really good season last year and I didn't fall off the tour. I definitely requalified and like had a few podiums. And so for me, it was like validating to go out at a high level
right.
competing still and know that I could keep doing it if I wanted to, but I'm just ready for something different. Yeah.
Sounds totally reasonable.
Yeah, it's reasonable, right?
A couple random questions for you.
Yes.
There's this fun, whenever I come up to Tahoe and I talk to like locals and skiers in Tahoe, mm-hmm. there's this fun like competition among locals for who's doing the coolest thing and saw the coolest thing and knows the coolest people and whatever. And then, but then they all manage to turn their like competitive spirit against the like people, the weekend warrior types who come up and ski at the resorts and do foolish things on the ski runs.
Yeah.
So are there like, what are your pet peeves? I get like your biggest pet peeves that you see inexperienced skiers doing on the mountain.
I have this like holy patrolly background, right? So when people duck ropes, I get pretty butthurt because, or just like duck ropes in dumb places because it's like they could be shooting still and it ruins it for everyone else. And if you duck a rope, maybe just do it where nobody can freaking see you. Like, be smart about it. That drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think traffic drives me crazy, like everybody else.
Everybody.
I mean, people with like chains on or like who've never driven in the snow. We get a little aggro as locals in town, to be honest, right? Yeah. People are like stuck on your back street. And you're like, God, Google Maps again, right? But I don't really get aggro. I mean, people are just, I'm just stoked that people want to ski still in this like global climate change that we have snow for everyone to enjoy, right?
So yeah.
I think it's, I don't really have any. If you want to come up and ski, that's great. Have fun. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another question I wanted to ask you. It seems like more people are getting into backcountry skiing,
mm-hmm.
which carries all kinds of different risks and dangers
yeah.
From inbound skiing.
Yeah.
And I guess I just wonder about your thoughts on that. I've teed this up with like search and rescue,
yeah.
With other skiers, with local ski patrollers. And it seems like a thing that everybody is acutely aware of. It's like right. these people are coming up and yeah. They want to get away from the crowds, but they don't have the experience or the know-how
yeah.
to be able to handle themselves properly in the backcountry or the side country. And they're getting themselves into trouble. And it just seems like something that is happening more and more.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'm not going to say like if you don't have experience, don't go backcountry skiing, because I think that the mountains are for everyone and they changed my life. So, I like to keep saying that with the rest of the world. It's like way better to go skiing in the mountains than it is to sit on your couch and watch TV. So I'm a full promoter of backcountry skiing
mm-hmm.
At any skill level. But I think one thing you can like do on an individual basis is get education, whether you can afford a course or you learn on just reading material online or books. Like, that is super important, and having a good partner and knowing when to go out and when is not a good time and when is like it'll be fine. So we have in the area here one resource is online is the Sierra Avalanche Center,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of give a forecast every single day. There's observations and you kind of can get a gist of what's happening. And also just being like paying attention to the weather and cognizant of certain risks. So I guess it's just education, and there's so many avenues for that up here. Like Kirkwood has like, they host all these different ARI courses. They have them at the college. They have give talks all around town any evening, just like, just even going and like getting some general ideas and like having the correct tools before you go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like beacon, shovel, probe,
yeah.
Partner. Don't bring your dog backcountry skiing, sorry. And I think that, yeah, I think it's definitely a real issue. We're fortunate here and where we're at because we have a pretty stable snowpack most of the time, not all the time. But in other places, it's like constant. Colorado and Utah, where it's not so stable and you have a big commute, like population, there's a lot more deaths.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're super lucky here.
Right.
But yeah, that's, I don't know. I think people need to get outside as much as possible.
Full stop.
Yeah.
Cool. That seems like a great place to end it. So thanks very much, Hazel. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, no worries.
Thanks very much again to Hazel for having me over and making time to come on the podcast. If you want to follow what she's up to, she's a great Instagram follow. Check her out at Hazel Birnbaum, B-A-U-M. If you want to follow what I'm up to with California Travel, I'm on Twitter at Greg R. Thomas, or you can email me at gthomas@sfchronicle.com. Wild West is a production of the San Francisco Chronicle. Support Wild West and the newsroom that creates it by signing up for a Chronicle membership on sfchronicle.com/pod. See you next time.